You're listening to A Word in Your Ear with Professor Rolly Sussex, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.
There's nothing surer to promote hearty debate than quibbling over the correct pronunciation of words or how best to use them. And to this end, I am bringing you the solution. His name is Professor Rolly Sussex. He's from the University of Queensland and he is here to help. If you have a question for Rolly, he's a very popular man on afternoons, so give me a call on 1300 222 612 or text in your question 0467 922 612. Good afternoon, Rolly.
Hello, Anna. How are you?
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you in here. Always a delight.
Thank you. We haven't done this for a while.
We haven't done this in a long time. Yeah. Now, Rolly, I understand that today you'd like to talk about using endings to make English words.
Suffixes, yes.
Suffixes.
Yes. Occasionally I'm called suffix, which is fun. But you've got prefixes, which come at the start, and suffixes, which come at the end, and you can actually have infixes as well,
which go in the middle of words.
Yeah, as in tumba, bloody rumba, shooting kanga, bloody ruse. You can do it in Australian English. That is called temesis as well, T-M-E-S-I-S, from the Greek word to cut.
Right.
So you cut the word and slot in something like bloody, which will go. But the endings in English, there's a huge pool of these things, and we've got to know how to use them correctly. The one that sparked my interest today was agreement and agreeance, because officially, according to the dictionaries, agreement is what you should prefer. But the Macquarie, at its last edition, put in agreeance, because they're saying, look, we are obliged to record usage. A lot of people are saying this. They've put it second, which means that it is not preferred.
Right.
But it means that they do acknowledge its existence.
So instead of people saying we are in agreement, they're saying we're in agreeance.
Yes. Hmm. Now, there are about, this is thanks to the Oxford English Dictionary, it lets you do these searches. I found that there are about 1,900 words ending in M-E-N-T in English.
Right.
And there's about 1,800 which end in either A-N-C-E or E-N-C-E.
E-N-C-E.
All right. Mm. And the interesting thing there is 1900, 1800, they're about equal. So in theory, agreeance isn't such a terrible outcome. It just happens to not to be the one that is chosen for this word.
Mm.
And a lot of time you just got to know. Now, the ones that you can almost always plump for are the I-N-G ones. And these are gerunds, they're nouns, like, running is fun, smoking is bad for you. And there are nearly 11,000 of those. So that, it's a fair number.
It's getting up there.
Yeah. But with A-N-C-E and E-N-C-E, how do you know whether the word is going to go A-N-C-E or E-N-C-E?
Mm.
And Pam Peters, in her beautiful Cambridge Guide to Australian English Usage, says, look, if you got it something in C and ending in C, like in a sense, then that's going to go E-N-C-E.
Yeah.
Right? Likewise, diligence.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, if it was G-A-N-C-E, it would be diligance.
Diligance.
Would be wrong.
Wouldn't, yeah.
All right. Also, quence, like consequence.
Quence, yeah.
Right? And S-C-E-N-C-E, like convalescence.
I see, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All of those ones go E-N-C-E.
E-N-C-E, yeah.
And as for the rest, if you can think of related words like dominant, now is it dominance or dominance?
Mm.
Well, it's dominant, so that gives you an A, and it means dominance.
Dominant. I see. That's a trick.
And whereas preferential, it's not preferential, preferential, that's an E, so preference. And so, the related word will often give you the best clue you've got as to whether it's going to go A-N or E-N.
The suffix.
That's right.
Now, Rolly, speaking of preferences, we've got a question here from Sandy in Laidley. And she's commenting about people using who instead of that. Are you there, Sandy?
Hello. No, it's the other way around. It's commentators, news readers, people who write articles in newspapers, stories for children in books. When they're referring to people, they're using the word instead of who.
Yep, that was taught to me at school as being a mistake, or at least being not favoured. Nowadays, all of the grammar books say, look, they're equally desirable either way. So the man that I saw, the man who I saw, the man whom I saw, and in fact, that gets you out of the problem of deciding whether you're going to use who or whom, and whom, I'm afraid, is on the skids, except after prepositions like for whom, for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. So that is fine as a relative pronoun. There's nothing wrong with it, I'm afraid. And what we were taught at school, if you were taught that it was wrong, is now no longer so. Sorry.
I hope that's cleared that up for you, Sandy. Now, this is a cute little question from Mary in Milton. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
What would you like to ask Professor Rolley?
I'd like to ask Professor Rolley, everybody now seems to be changing the word sneaked to snuck.
Yep.
And is there such a word as snuck?
There is in America.
That's what it is. That's why it offends me.
No, not all Americanisms are bad. We've taken on a lot of them and we don't even know, like okay, you know, okay.
Yes, that's true.
A long time ago when I was a kid, was still thought to be, you know, putting on airs and trying to imitate the Americans. Nowadays, okay is one of the two most recognised words on the planet, and it's American. But no, the sneak thing, sneak is a verb which is weak. There are weak verbs and strong verbs change the vowel or do nothing, you know, like shoot shot. Weak verbs go ed on the end, and all new verbs are weak verbs. So if Anna and I designed a little vehicle for running around on the moon and the action that it does is clonk, right, then, no, sorry, let's make it sklunk. Sklink, all right. Then our little vehicle sklinked around the moon, all right. It goes ED.
Right.
Now, what's happened is that snuck in American English is a strong verb. It changes the vowel. And we've borrowed it, and I've heard quite a lot on Rugby League, so-and-so snuck in the corner for a try.
I know, they say it all the time.
And, you know, it is, in fact, a little shorter and easier if you're talking fast. And I think
awful.
Particularly in football, it's become probably more common than sneaked. Other than that, we don't use sneak a great deal.
No, well, I correct my grandchildren, and my grandson corrected his teacher one day.
Uh-huh.
She said, "Who told you?" And he said, "My grandma."
Yeah, and grandmas are to be feared. But you are.
They're always correct.
Yeah, well, in this case, it used to be sneaked, and for most people, I think it still is sneaked.
Yes.
But in certain functions, particularly in football, it's become snuck.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks very much,
thank
Mary.
You
go on correcting. I think that's that's a great thing to do. And Rolly, I can't think of anything more delightful than sklinking around with you in a purpose-made vessel on
well,
the moon. Well,
we've created a word. Let's see how far it goes. Because to sklink, you know, sklinking is in fact a very desirable activity.
Mm.
Yeah, and sklink quickly, or you're going to fall down a crevasse.
Well, we'll make sure we'll do that.
Okay.
Craig from Palmwood, Rolly, are you there, Craig?
Yes. How are you, Rolly?
Hi there.
What's your question?
Well, it's rugby league related as well. The other day, Matt Gillett re-signed with the Broncos for 4 years. Now, if he didn't like the place, he could have resigned from the Broncos.
Yes.
Now, how do we get two words that seem so very similar but mean the exact opposite?
Okay.
And do we have to be careful if we send an email to our boss to say, I've decided to re-sign?
Okay. But the trouble is that they are two completely different sources, right? And one of them, they're related sources, but they've made two different words in modern English. So resign is related to signing, right? Where the S-I-G-N bit is where you put your name at the bottom of something. And so to resign, that re is actually an old French one and it means back. So if you like, you're signing back from something or getting yourself out of it. Whereas the re-sign one, that re means again. And that re is used lots of times. You know, I'm going to redouble my efforts, that sort of thing. So we've got two words. You can make them clearly different by putting in a hyphen when you write them. Re-sign will get you out of trouble.
Yep.
And that's a good way of doing it. And again, if you're pronouncing them, they will be quite clearly different because re-sign is two syllables and resign, the first one is the vowel is almost lost. So you're right there, but they do have a common, way, way back a common cause, but in modern English they're two totally different words.
Okay.
Thanks, Craig.
Nice Thank observation, you. Though.
Yeah, thanks for that, Craig. Rolly, we're going to go now to Dave in Curraby.
Yep.
I don't know where Curraby is. Where's Curraby, Dave?
Near Underwood. It's right on the fringe of Brisbane and Logan.
Okay. What's your question for the professor?
Rolly, it's an indigenous term. The way of the Tweed, they refer to themselves as the Koori Nation. Above the Tweed, they refer to themselves as the Murray Nation. Now, I've asked a Murray person what's the difference, and he couldn't tell me, sir. Is it a language-based thing? Is it a dialect thing?
Yep. There are different words for Aboriginal people in different parts of Australia. And Murray and Koori are two of the common ones. I can tell you that Koori comes from a language, I think, called Awabakal, and it means man in that language. So, no, it's the word for man. So he's one of our people, as it were. But not all of the languages have provided a word like this for wider use. So Koori and, you know, this is a part of the way in which we are. We should describe Indigenous people out of courtesy for the way they want to talk about themselves. But I'll get a complete list for you next week. It's quite interesting around the country.
Okay. Thanks very much for your question there, David. We've got another David on the line here, Rolly, and mm-hmm. he's got a delightful question. I'll let you ask your question to Rolly, David.
Thanks, guys. Good afternoon. Chicken is chicken, lamb is lamb, but cow is beef and pig is pork.
Okay, the names of the animals versus the names of the meat, you mean?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, this was picked up by Sir Walter Scott in a novel called Ivanhoe, around about 1808, I think. And he said, look, the names of the animals, like cow and bull and sheep, come from Old English and Germanic. Now, this is the roots of English. Whereas the names of the meats tend to come from French, like pork and beef. All right. Mm. Apparently, English cooking was so awful in 1066 when William the Conqueror came over and beat Harold at the Battle of Hastings that the English language acquired the names for the meats from French,
right.
But kept the old names for the animals, which continued from English. All right.
Mm. Right.
Now, chicken is probably from. It's related to chook and so on. It's a British dialect, and I think it's probably onomatopoeic. It's the name, the sort of sound that these things make.
Yes.
Because I think it, although it's been eaten for donkey's years, I wonder what the meat of a donkey is. it's given its name to the animal and to the food. Chicken actually is an old English word, and it comes from Dutch. And it's related to German Küchlein, so that it's from the, if you like, the core basis of English.
Mm.
And it's one of the fewer meats which actually has an English name.
Mm.
Goat is another one, by the way, and goat is one of the most eaten meats in the world because the Muslims don't eat pork and the Hindus don't eat beef, and they are among the greatest consumers of meat protein in the world. So chicken is unusual.
Very interesting question. Thank you. Here to have a word in your ear, we've got Professor Rolly Sussex on Afternoons today with me, Anna Daniels filling in for Kelly Higgins-Devine for a couple of days. 1300 222 612 is the number to call. Now, Rolly, we've got a question from Matthew Eleonora. Matthew's been on the phone for a while. You still there, Matthew?
Yes, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. What's your question?
Oriented and orientated.
Mm-hmm.
Are they both correct? Orientated to me really great when I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct in saying that?
They're both correct. The original one was Orient, and it means really to point towards the Orient, which is the East.
Ah.
Right? And so you try and get particularly your churches lined up the right way. The trouble is that the noun is orientation. And once you've got orientation, you think, wait a moment, there ought to be a verb to go with it. Uh-huh, that ought to be orientate. So you create it. And that is called a back formation, where you create a word which didn't exist before. Pam Peters, again, in her style guide, says that Orient wins out over Orientate by about 8-1 in Australia. There is a bit of a difference between orienting something geographically, you know, north-south, and orienting your ideas.
Yes.
But certainly the noun is always orientation. And, you know, what is your political orientation, your ethical orientation, your prandial orientation if you're talking about dinner? So the noun kind of gives us an excuse to say orientate, but orient is much more common.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you for your question. Now let's go to Harvey Bay, Riley.
All right.
Why not? Lovely part of Queensland. G'day, Steve. You're up there in Harvey Bay?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Now, another sport-related question
for
you.
Well, kind of sport-related. I don't even know if it's a real question or not. I find myself getting increasingly annoyed at commentators, in particular on the television, when it could be soccer, it could be rugby league quite often, and they'll refer to the players as being pressurised, or he's been pressurised in the corner, I'm thinking to myself, what the, put him in a room and suck out all the air?
Inflate him or something, yes.
Mm.
No, to pressurise is to increase the pressure rather than to take it away.
Okay.
He'd be vacuumised if it was being put in a vacuum. I think pressured is better than this, because putting pressure on someone is to pressure them. Pressurise is a more technical term, and it really means to increase the air pressure.
Mm.
But because the two are rather similar, I'm afraid you're quite right. And it's people are using pressurise, meaning to put pressure on someone. I actually object to the word pressure. You know, how are you handling the pressure? Well, thank you. I'm surviving. You know.
Well, I'm still here.
Yeah, but no, you're quite right. Pressurise is I think technically not correct, but becoming very common. And once it grates, of course, and once you're sensitised to it, you will hear it everywhere, and it'll ruin your day.
Indeed. Well, I'm sure we're not ruining anyone's day today. I'm here with Professor Rolly Sussex, 1300 222 612, if you've got a question for Rolly this afternoon. Rolly, we're going to Fig Tree Pocket now, and an interesting question from you, Richard.
Thank you. Hi, Rolly.
Hi there.
One of the things that's become part of common speak relates to telephone calls where there's a button you have to press.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that the shape of the design was actually a hatch tag. So shouldn't, if someone wants to get some marijuana, shouldn't they press hatch for hash?
Mm. yeah, we won't go there. Hash in British English is sometimes called the pound sign as well. And its technical name is an octothorpe, O-C-T-O-T-H-O-R-P, because it's got 8 points, if you count up all the ends at the end. And that is supposed to have been invented by someone working for Bell Labs around about the 80s, I think. Hashtag, probably from hatch, because it's cross-hatching, you know, where you have two lines one way and two lines at right angles to them. But now hash has taken over entirely. And, of course, there are other things like hashing in computer science, which is doing funny things with numbers. So you're quite right. Hatch is probably the origin. But if you really want to confuse your friends, talk about an octothorpe and see what they say.
There you go. There's your next challenge. Rolly, John in Enogra.
Yep.
John, you've got an interesting question. Feel free to ask away.
Yeah, I think it's about the suffix ER and double E, as in employer and employee. Mm. I mean, employer employs an employee, a payer pays a payee.
Yes.
So when someone escapes from prison, why are they called an escapee?
Ah.
Surely they should be an escapeur.
Right. They are escapeurs in a sense, but we borrowed this word from French.
Mm.
And the French verb échapper, ending in ER, means to escape, and someone who has done it, if I have escaped, is j'ai échappé, I have escaped, and the person who has done it is un échappé, which is E acute. And so there are a series of these in English. The really tricky one is mortgage, because a mortgagee is the lender, all right, and the mortgagor is someone who is putting their house or whatever up as collateral against a loan. And so you mortgage yourself, as it were. And the word mortgage is related to M-O-R-T in French, which means death.
Oh.
So you are committing yourself to death in order to buy a house. So the reason is that there are a few in EE like that, meaning people who do it, and they're all from French.
Okay. Brilliant.
Thanks. Right,
yeah. Thanks very much for your question, John. We're going to go now to a popular question. We've had a couple of people ring up asking this same question, Rolly. Mm-hmm. Richard in Stanthorpe, good afternoon.
I'm wondering why people say terribly nice and pretty ugly.
Ah, yeah. Both of these things are now intensifiers, and that means that they take the adjective, like ugly or whatever, and make it a bit more. But terribly means quite a lot.
Yes.
Right? And pretty means somewhat. And they are both used without meaning terrible and nice looking anymore.
They're opposites, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty ugly.
Yes. But pretty is only a little bit. I think the thing that you're saying is that they're both on the positive side. Mm. They increase the value of whatever you've got. If it is threatening, is pretty threatening, that's not too bad. Terribly threatening is really ominous.
Yes.
And so they're two different levels of whatever the adjective is. Terribly and awfully and frightfully used to mean with terror, with awe and with fright. but they've lost that by being overused so much. And generally speaking, if you overuse a word like bloody, it just, you know, it loses any of its original
its
kick.
Its emphasis, yeah.
And it just becomes sort of part of the background wallpaper.
Parlance.
And so all of these now, I'm terribly pleased to see you,
yeah.
which just means I'm very.
Yes.
And that's they're different levels of very. So over time, they've lost the original meaning of terror and so on. And pretty is used quite a lot in a kind of wishy-washy way. I'm pretty surprised, meaning it's caused me a little bit of unease, but not much. So this is where they come from.
Okay, thank you for clearing that up, Rolly. Now, Rolly, this is the perennial debate, I reckon, in the language stakes. You there, Ross? No.
You've killed Ross?
Are you there, Ross? Oh, no, I'm just going to ask Ross's question for
you. Okay.
Ross in Everton Park, is it me and my friend or my friend and I?
Okay. First thing is that in English there's a – it's not a grammar rule. I and my friend is okay.
Yeah.
But there's a kind of rule of politeness which says you don't put yourself first because it sounds pushy.
Right.
So my friend and I is the correct order. You put I last. And then the question is it me or is it I? And the answer is that you use I for subjects.
Okay.
Right. So if I go, then it's my friend and I go. And if it's they gave it to me, then they gave it to John and me. But a lot of people are now getting them confused. So I've heard even Dame Judi Dench say with John and I rather than with John and me. And quite a lot of the grammar books are saying, look, this is after and, any of the distinctions between I and me are being blurred. So I can tell you what the official version is, but in speech you will find a lot of them getting overlaid.
Rolly, can we give you one more question, last question today from Grant from Deception Bay, and I promise, Grant, Rolly's not going to deceive you.
Oh.
Have you got your wireless on in the radio? You got the radio on in the background there, Grant?
No, I don't. No, there's no feedback, is there?
A little feedback, but anyway, quickly get to your question and
I'll be very quick. Also, I'm not sure whether I'm being a grammatical snob or whether I'm actually incorrect, but I'm not sure whether you're going to go or are you just going. I hear a lot of going to go.
Mm-hmm. And, okay. Going to is a way of doing the future. So I'm going to go to town tomorrow. Right, and that means it's something which is going to take place beyond the current moment, and quite a lot of languages have used the verb to go in that way to make a future, and it means that we have several ways of doing the future in English, and one of them is I will go, but a very very common one is I'm going to go, and it simply means sometime in the future.
Right, so going to go is legitimate.
Oh yes, absolutely, and very very common.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call there, Richard. And Rolly, we're going to go.
We're going to go.
You're going to go.
Do you want a last word?
I'd love a last word.
Okay. What is the difference between a cat and a comma?
No, I don't know.
Michael Bausch is looking suspicious. A cat has claws at the end of its paws and the other one is that the paws is at the end of the claws.
Oh, ha ha.
Claws at the end of the paws at the end of the
we
claws.
We need like one of those little ba-boom ching little sound effects.
Haven't you got one of those?
Yeah, you'd think I would.
Michael can do a ba-boom and you can do the ching.
We'll get Michael to do it. Thanks very much, okay. Professor Rolly Sussex. See you next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
You've been listening to A Word in Your Ear, a podcast from 612 ABC Brisbane. For more information, visit abc.net.au/Brisbane.